everyone. This is Monica Wamsley. I'm here doing Sunday Unpacked with Pastor James. We're going to talk about his sermon that he preached on September 1st, and it is called Tell the Story. And he based it on the scripture Deuteronomy 11. So, Pastor, can you just kind of give us a little heads up about why this sermon? Where did it come from?
Yeah, you know, we're between series because I finished a series last week, and I didn't want to start a series on Labor Day weekend because it's a holiday weekend and some people are out of town, and I'd rather them be in on the beginning of a series. So I chose one from before because, you know, preachers do actually preach sermons more than once. So I went back to the well and pulled this out. It was actually a Mother's Day sermon from several years ago, and I preached it in a church in Zimbabwe, strangely enough, as well. But we haven't talked about sharing Jesus for a while. So, you know, that's always an important topic, and I think it was good for us to do that. Plus, I've been in the New Testament a lot, and this is from the Old Testament. And this is sort of a less sort of like doctrinal kind of series. It was more a sermon. So it was an opportunity to actually tell a story about sort of my experience, my family, and then relate that to how we share the story. So I just thought that was a good change for us before we launch into the next series.
That's really cool. I love stories. I think we all do.
Right.
And that's basically how they passed on scripture back in the day, was oral tradition.
Right. It's all oral tradition before we have the written word. Yeah.
So, and that's one of the reasons I love the Old Testament, to kind of understand how all of that oral tradition came to be placed in books and
right.
Everything. That was one of the great things about college, was learning how all that came together.
Right.
But also one of the things I like is that our culture is so different than theirs. And the way that we interact with God is different as well. Like, we don't see pillars of clouds and
right, sure.
and smoke and fire and all that. But how do we learn lessons from stories that come from such a distant past and a different culture?
Well, you know, it's a challenge. And part of the work of a preacher or a teacher is to, as best we can, and we can, we're never perfect at this. We never get it fully right. But to be able to reach back and to think about what was it like to live in that day, and how did the first readers of this message, how did they hear this message? So this is a message from God, from Yahweh, through Moses to the people of Israel. And part of the job of the preacher is to think about, okay, how did they hear that and what did they learn from it? And then the next step is, what lessons in that passage can speak to us in our world in a very different culture? So it really does take several steps from the text to the congregation. And, you know, that's honestly part of what I enjoy doing, is getting that from the original text and doing that study and then thinking about, how does this apply to me? How would this apply to somebody who has little kids, since my kids are grown? How would it apply to someone who's retired, since I'm still working? How does it apply to someone who just lives a very different life from me in any number of ways? And I think that's really part of the fun, the creativity of preaching. So whenever we preach and teach, you know, there's several steps before we get to the message.
I just love in the Old Testament, they had family around all the time, and, you know, they passed it down
right.
to their kids, and it's really cool to see us still doing that in a different way. And I look at how many generations we have alive now and how many generations they had alive back then, because their lifespan was so much greater
right.
than ours is now. So we worry about, how are we going to reach multi-generations, which you just mentioned, you know, retired and people that have kids. And I think it's really cool that we can maybe take it from them too, to learn that.
Right.
And it said even in Deuteronomy 11, you know, teach it to your children. You write it on your doorpost, or, you know, on your...
Write it on the wall, right
yes,
on the doorframe.
Yes, yeah. It was like basically every part of your life is going to be touched by this story
right.
or is affected by this story. And I think that that just shows us that it is relevant for all generations and all cultures and all time.
Right.
So, speaking of Moses, we don't always see miracles like we saw in the days of Moses and the prophets, and certainly not like Jesus when he was, you know, walked past a funeral procession and told them to rise up, and they did.
Right.
You know, we don't see that now. And one example, sometimes we just don't recognize it, or we don't know how to recognize it, or if it was God or wasn't God. For instance, on 9/11, we only think about how we lost 300 first responders. But some people could look at that and say that God held those towers in place so that those first responders could save or rescue over 2,000 people. So how do we go about talking about those things? And, you know, if some people call those miracles, or the hand of God was at work in that, or how do we address those things?
Well, it's a really good question. I mean, I like this question because it challenges me a little bit, because frankly, I tend to be a little skeptical. That's my nature. Okay. So when someone says, well, God did this, I always think, well, how do we know God did that?
Yeah.
Well, we can't know for sure, right? That is part of what faith is about, because mm-hmm. God doesn't always like write it on the wall. Hey, I'm about to do this, so when it happens, you're going to know that it was me. And yet, I think there are some things that we can look for, right? I mean, at the very least, we can talk about things that bless us, and that those are things that God is at work doing. And so when things happen in our lives, and maybe someone is literally healed in an amazing way that shocked them and shocks us, maybe at first we say, well, I don't know. Did God do that? Well, we do know it was a blessing. And so at the very least, what we can do is thank God for the blessing that was present in that.
Right.
And labeling and knowing for sure whether God did something or God didn't, I think at one level is sort of a matter of perception, and how do I see that, and how is the Spirit at work in me to understand that event, right? Because I don't understand all this without the Spirit of God at work.
Right.
So I think this is really complex, but really important for us to think about, because we do know that God is still at work. He hasn't forgotten us, and that when we pray, He hears us. So we should expect that He would be at work. And whether or not we know for sure on each one of these events whether this was the hand of God performing a miracle or not, we can still thank God for the fact that it happened, and that He's in charge, and that we trust Him. So my answer is not perfect, but I hope that helps some.
Yeah. I have a personal story with this. Is it okay if I
share
it? Yeah. Okay. So, you know, when John and I were pregnant with Lucy, and we had that first anatomy scan where they told us there was so much wrong with her and that she probably wouldn't live, we were just devastated, of course, as anyone would be. And then, you know, through prayer and just a lot of just seeking God and why would this happen, I just kind of took on that philosophy as long as I have breath, there is hope for healing. You know, I'd been through the devastating loss of my sister, so I knew that death is very, very possible, and that loss is part of my life from the age of 6 on. I knew how very real it was. But then John just said, you know, as long as we're pregnant, there's hope. So as long as I could breathe for her, there was hope that her diaphragm would be healed. So every appointment that we went to was a little bit of a plus. We were told initially that her heart, the whole left side of her heart was not working, not functioning at all. So not only did we have the diaphragm issue, the lung issue, but we had the heart issue. So we're like, okay, well, you know, this isn't looking so great.
Right.
They sent us down to St. Louis. A fetal cardiologist spent 45 minutes to an hour studying her heart and the blood flow. And they're like, you know, we do see where they thought her left side of her heart was not working because it is smushed, but it's everything's flowing like it should, you know. So was it the greater technology that they could see it better? Was it God healing her heart and giving us hope just so that we can make it through the pregnancy? I mean, she did pass away shortly after birth, but we needed that little bit of hope every time. So in our faith, we accepted that that was from God, just boosting our faith and encouraging us that we were making the only decision we could, but keeping our spirits positive so that we could enjoy the pregnancy and enjoy the parenting, even though we were pregnant. You know, you can have a devastating pregnancy all the way through, or we could have joy and hope all the way through. And I feel like, miracle or not, it helped us have that hope. So sure. John likes to look at it as a miracle. I tend to agree with him, but that was a little miracle that gave us hope. And it was our perspective of, as long as there is breath, there is hope.
Well, you know, and it points to the fact that even if God performs a miracle or God acts or however you want to describe that, it doesn't always mean that everything's going to work out just like you want, right?
Exactly.
But God gave you time.
Gave us time, for sure.
God gave you an opportunity. God gave, for a time, life. Mm-hmm. And to me, those are all blessings. It didn't, in the end, turn out exactly, well, not at all like you wanted.
No.
But that doesn't mean God wasn't at work in the process. So I think you're right. I mean, I like that there was hope even when, all right?
When it seemed hopeless. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's good.
That is. Yeah. So you had said in the sermon, back to the sermon, that we can know facts and still not know God. And it's hard to have a relationship with facts. And this is so true with Christianity. How does that speak to the life of a Christian, that you can know, yes, Jesus was born of a virgin, he was this and this and this, but that, just knowing those facts, does not create a relationship?
Well, it doesn't. And, you know, I can get hung up on some of that myself, because, you know, if you just studied Paul, right, if you just studied Paul's writings, you would learn a lot of facts about who God is. You would learn a lot of facts about what does it mean for Jesus to be God's son. But can you imagine just having that and not having the Gospels, mm-hmm. not having the book of Acts that tell us stories, and even the Old Testament, that tell us stories of how God was at work? And so I think we can know things about Jesus, but when we hear what Jesus did and what he said and how he interacted with people, that's a very different thing from just knowing this truth about the identity of Christ. And we want more now. We want a relationship with God through Jesus. And so we certainly need Paul, and I study Paul a lot, but we also need the Gospels that tell us the story so we can actually get to know who God is. And who Jesus was, and how that informs who we are.
Yeah, I think that when you study the Gospels and Paul, you can kind of get to know them and their personalities a little bit.
Right.
And if you really look at them, like you said, we don't know the person until we know their story. If you read the Gospels and learn about Paul's stories, then Paul makes much more sense.
Right.
From where he came from.
But right.
As we're thinking about communicating the message of Jesus to the people around us, what does this say about telling our story or about listening to the stories of others? Because Paul had to listen to he lived the stories that Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John are telling us about.
That's right. So I think the first thing it tells us is that if we want to share the story, we've got to listen to other people's stories, because we can't know where they are. I mean, we can't mm-hmm. know what has informed them spiritually, what life experiences, what words were spoken to them. I mean, if we don't know where they are, how can we begin to talk about who Jesus is in a meaningful way? And I think sometimes people who feel a burden, like a spiritual burden for sharing Jesus with the people around them, can, not always, but can get so caught up in what they are going to say that they forget to listen to the stories of the other person. And then the other person is just like conquest. Like we want to win them, right?
Yeah.
But that's not really the core of this. Part of this is a relationship, and we want to invite them into a relationship with Jesus. And so we've got to get to know them and value them as a person, which is entirely consistent with the way that God deals with people, right? Because they are valued because they are created by Him. So they have inherent value as human beings. And I think that's the first step to any of this, is seeing the value in those people as human beings and not just somebody we want to convince to do something. I mean, we certainly want to share the message of Jesus, but we want them to know that they're valuable simply because they are human beings before we say too much. And then, yeah, I think we need to tell our story, because stories are powerful. I mean, that's why we love to watch dramas on TV, and we watch movies, because story speaks to us in ways that facts don't. So we need to tell the stories of Scripture, which are powerful stories, and we need to tell our own stories of how God has been at work in our lives. So I think those things work together.
I agree wholeheartedly. So it would seem that in sharing our stories, sharing the story of how God works in our life and our relationship with God and how He's moved in us, we're kind of talking about evangelism here, and that is definitely a word that carries a lot of baggage for some people, me included. So what is telling the stories all about? What is our goal here?
Well, so let's think about that for a minute, because for some people, they probably say, well, why would evangelism carry a lot of baggage, right? Because that isn't that sharing the good news? Isn't that what that word means? Well, yeah, it does mean that. But for some people, when they think evangelism or evangelist, the person who's doing that, what they hear is somebody screaming at me about me going to hell unless I come down to the front of the church tonight, right? Which is not really what we see ever in the Bible. So maybe what people are reacting against is something that we've created, not something that actually God has given us.
Right.
So if evangelism could be refilled with the meaning of this is good news, then I think it would be a great word. But for some people, it really does carry some negative connotations about somebody making me do something because I'm such a bad person. And really, you know, sharing the story of Jesus, sharing Jesus, maybe those are better ways. I don't know what the best language is, but here's how I view it. What we're doing is inviting people in to God's story.
Mm-hmm.
So God is at work redeeming. I mean, His goal is to redeem all of humanity, right? To bring everybody back, and really to bring all of creation back. And when we're telling the story of Jesus, we're inviting them to be part of God's story, where He is redeeming all who will believe, and in the end, all of creation. And that's good news, right?
It is.
Yes. It is not you're a terrible person, you're awful, and if you don't come down here right now, then there's bad stuff. Now, the truth is, we are all sinners. I'm a sinner. Every one of us has sinned, and we have offended God by our sins. So it's not that that's not true, but I think it's good news. And somehow we've decided that we have to phrase everything in terms of bad news first, and then a little bit of good news at the end that'll make it okay. But this is really a big story of God redeeming all of creation and calling it back to Him. And He wants us, every one of us, to be part of that. And to me, that's the best news we could have. And that's easy to share rather than just focusing on, oh, you're a terrible person.
Right. I think, there's a verse. I know there's a verse. I just don't know where it is, about all creation groans.
Right.
As in childbirth, in expectation of that restoration of the goodness and the purity and the wholeness of being with God and restoration with God. And just, yeah, I can see how our hearts groan for that. And the emptiness that we feel inside is our hunger and our yearning for that. And we just have to somehow connect God with that yearning in someone else. And if we don't listen, we can't
then
hear.
We can't do it. Right. Right.
So as we're telling our story or listening to someone else's story, how do we focus on how our story fits into God's story and maybe are better able to communicate that with others?
Well, I think the first question is, who's the main character of the story you're telling?
Exactly.
So if the main character of the story is me, then it's not the gospel, right? Because I didn't die for anybody's sins. Right. I'm not the Son of God. And I don't get salvation because of something that is so inherently good about me. If the story's main character is the Son of God, Jesus Christ, then you've got a good start on telling the gospel story. If this is all about what Christ has done for us, then that's the gospel. And when we can phrase it that way, I mean, I just think that's the core of it all. I was reading through Colossians 3, and over, Paul uses the word Christ, and he focuses, he comes back to Christ over and over again, because that's always his focus. And I think it should be our focus. And when it is, then people are drawn to him and not to us, because that's never the goal.
And I think a lot of times people are drawn to Christians because of Christ in us and not necessarily our personality. If we're truly living out the love of Christ, then it draws people.
Right. Absolutely.
So how do we balance grace and truth in telling our story? Because I know my story, I have needed a lot of grace. And I have seen God in it a lot, or in my life a lot, and given me a lot of grace and mercy. But some people tend to be hard on themselves when they think through their stories and think, well, I can't do this. This is not going to help anybody. What passages or scriptures do you think speak to that?
Well, you know, what immediately comes to mind for me is John 1:7, where John tells us that Jesus is full of grace and truth. Jesus was full of grace and truth, a balance of both. So Jesus was never afraid to tell people the truth, right? And sometimes that wasn't exactly pleasant. I mean, especially the religious leaders, the people mm-hmm. who should have known.
Right.
Jesus was very clear about what the truth was, but he was always a person of grace as well. And so he would bring healing to someone. He would bring forgiveness to someone, and he would also call them not to continue in sin.
Mm-hmm.
Because those things need to go together. Where there is no truth, there can be no grace, right? Because if we're unwilling to admit the truth about ourselves, then we don't see any need for grace. So we need both, but it has to be held in such a careful balance,
right?
Just as Jesus did. Sometimes we tend to do just the opposite of what Jesus did. Grace is for good people and truth is for bad people, right? Whereas Jesus, when he saw people who were hurting, who were outcast, who were struggling with sin, he extended grace. And when he saw people who were prideful in their own righteousness,
mm-hmm.
he spoke truth. So, I mean, I think the best thing is to follow the example of Jesus, right? I mean, that's how Jesus did it. And mm-hmm. if we can follow that, then we're on the right track.
Yeah. Had spoken in your sermon, and this was probably my favorite part of your sermon. I love when speakers show some vulnerability or some authenticity, and you talked about a very sensitive part of your family history involving the relationship between your great-grandparents. Some people have parts of their story that they find difficult to talk about. Should they share that? And also, how do they help their own children through processing those parts of their story that are not so great?
So the answers to this are as varied as the stories, right? So nobody's stories are the same, and nobody's feelings about those stories are the same. So there's no like one answer to this, And that's why it's such a really good question, because we are sensitive about our stories. And there are parts of our stories that we probably would just as soon not ever share with anyone. And I would say, follow the leading of the Spirit on this. Mm-hmm. When it's constructive to tell a story, tell it. Mm-hmm. When it's important for a relationship, tell it. But we don't have to tell everything to everybody either. But there can be, there is power in story, and it can be really important for people to know, oh, I thought she had it all together. Well, turns out part of their story tells me they don't have it all together. Maybe they're putting things together now, but there was a time when things were coming apart. Right. Well, I think that's great for people to hear, because part of the message of the gospel is restoration and wholeness and healing. And if we never talk about the time where we were in need of those things, then it's not real. And the people who are in the middle of the struggle and don't know how to find that healing are going to think it's not even possible. So when our story speaks to the people around us in a constructive way, I think we can tell it. And, you know, I think we look for the opportunities when our kids and maybe others are ready for our story. And maybe we know at some points they're just not. And that's okay, right? Mm-hmm. There may not be ready to hear that, ready to understand that. But it's also good for us to realize that you don't want to hide things so that later on people go, well, how did I not know that about my parents, grandparents, mm-hmm. whatever. But so often our stories really can help people through the things that they've got to go through. So often they're worth telling, and just know there is no family out there who's perfect, right? I mean, there's struggles in every single family, and things that kids take with them from their birth families that can be challenging. And mm-hmm. we should be the safe place to talk about that if we can.
Right. I think something you shared earlier about making God the center of the story,
right,
is going to help here, because our stories are important. Details, maybe not so much.
Yeah, yeah.
Especially personal intimate details, we don't want to, I don't want to say, how would you put that? Like, you don't want to, kind of celebrate or accentuate or focus on the sin. You
want Right.
to focus on the redemption,
yeah,
the salvation of it, and the turning of it, and the way it can be used for God's glory now.
Totally agree.
And God's forgiveness in it. So how can we communicate the greatness of God without building a fairy tale faith that will crumble in adversity?
This is like one of the big questions, right? Because, we want to always communicate the faithfulness of God, the love of God, the responsiveness of God, the fact that he listens when we seek him out. I mean, that's one of the messages of the Psalms, is that God listens. And so we want to build in people that kind of faith. With that said, we don't want to make too many guarantees that God's going to do this and God's going to do that. God's going to make it easy, because number one, we don't control God. And number two, I don't want to build a faith where people assume everything's going to be perfect. And then when it's not, well, they assume, well, either God is not listening or there's something wrong with me.
Right.
And neither one of those things may have anything to do with the truth. So I want to help people see that sometimes God acts in amazing and obvious ways, sort of like we talked about earlier.
Right.
And we should acknowledge that and thank him for that. And sometimes we don't always understand exactly what God's doing. And that doesn't mean that he's abandoned us. It may mean we have to wait. It may mean we may not understand. But this is still the same God who, if nothing else, is with us.
Right.
He is present, and we can depend on that. So it's always depending on what God has actually promised, not just what I want him to do.
Exactly.
So that's a big question.
It is. And I think that David gives us a great example of that, as you mentioned in the Psalms, because he could be in the depths of despair and then crying out to God at the beginning of a psalm, and at the end of the psalm, he's like, oh, how great is our God? And he's, you know, no one is greater. Did his circumstance change? Was he still going to face his enemies when he came out of that? He was. He just was at peace in his spirit, and he needed to know that God was with him, and that took him out of that place of desperation and gave him hope to face what he had to face.
Right.
It didn't make everything magically better.
No.
And just like knowing those step by step with those doctor visits didn't make our situation any better. It helped us know God was present and God was with us in it. And I think that we can take a lot of strength from the Psalms in that, but we can't hide the fact that the situation that brought about the need for the Psalm of David didn't change.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, and it was David's response to what God was doing in his life. He was aware of God's presence. That's what changed. If I'm getting that right.
Yeah.
Okay. So, this sermon, was not part of a series, like you said, but I think it's really important for us, to know what part of a sermon speaks to you or impacts you, the most personally. So
yeah, and I think we're going to make this part of our regular routine of questions, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, for me, it was an odd thing, because in our first service, we sang a song that was not, I mean, it was not planned for this reason. Our worship leader picked it out, and it's Near to the Heart of God. And it brought back a memory in the middle of that service as I heard it of sitting next to my grandmother that I had talked about. And, you know, if someone wants to hear the story, they can listen to the message. I won't repeat it now, but it just took me back to, I mean, this was September of 1983 when my other grandmother passed away. And so you're talking about over 40 years, but I was suddenly present with her. And what really spoke to me in that moment was the safety that I always felt from both her and my grandfather. And, that she gave me something that she didn't have as a child. That safety and stability and, unconditional love that I could always depend on. And that's a huge blessing. And it really tied into, you know, what the message was about and the stories that transform us. So, I mean, it was unexpected, sort of serendipitous,
yeah,
but it was meaningful to me, if to no one else. So,
yeah. Well, I think it's great. You know, to go back to a place of safety. And if we tell the story that God is a place of safety and
right,
that he'll provide that throughout our lives, if we just acknowledge it. And I just love that it just came to you like in the middle of that service.
Yeah, and that rarely happens,
yeah,
for me. So, you know, that's one of those things where I sort of go, well, was that just happenstance or was God at work in that? And for me, it felt like God was at work in that. Felt like the Spirit of God sort of touched me in a way that I did not expect in the middle of that service. So I'm thankful for it.
All right. All right. So that's going to wrap up our Sunday Impact for today. I just want to encourage you to go ahead and send those questions in, or comments to questions@taylorvillechristian.com. Or text your questions or comments to 217-712-6621. Thanks. Bye.